you want me to stay, I'll be around today to be available for you to see.
Well, we shall we talk for 20 minutes and
about nothing. Let's do some intro and then let's talk some comics.
Okay.
I'm going to read it because I'm a good reader.
All right.
Hello and welcome to the inaugural episode of Comics Therapy. Now, before we get started, it's important to note that neither Aaron nor I is a certified psychotherapist, although we're arguably both certifiable. And while we'll be discussing the relationship dysfunction, mental anguish, and situational anxiety of this week's comics, we urge you not to take any of the following banter as serious medical advice. I mean, I went to school for theater, and Aaron fixes computers. We both just really love comics. And on that note, what are the issues in the issues we've got lined up this week?
Let's see. I think the first issue we have to talk about is Lazarus.
Yes, yes. Let's talk about Lazarus. What are we going to talk about in Lazarus?
Well, there's a lot of family stuff going on, isn't there?
There is. Not your typical family. Not at all.
Or is it?
Well, I don't know. There's a lot of, like, I feel like everybody's sleeping with everybody in this. Am I reading too much into it? That's not really the case in my family, but I don't want to make any judgments on anybody else's experiences. But something is up with the Carlisle family and how close some of the siblings seem to be.
Yeah, the brother and the sister especially very Shakespearean in that way.
Yes, yes, delightful.
But it's... So, well, it's interesting, like, to look at it from, like, a sibling standpoint. Like, I have a younger brother. I didn't grow up with multiple siblings. So, like, friends of mine who had, you know, like, four or five kids in the family, mm-hmm. there's always one of the kids who is the kind of the protector. Like, I think that role comes out.
Do you think that happens more when there are more than two siblings? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I think that's a natural kind of role establishment.
Yeah.
You know, no matter how the parents are, you know, but I think that role can come out if the parents, like, if one of the kids has to protect, you know, the older one has to protect the
younger,
if the parents are a problem. But regardless, there's this hierarchy that kind of shows up with kids, you know, multiple kids in the family.
That's interesting because I think that in this issue, the second issue of Lazarus, is the first time that it became clear to me how much of an outsider Eve is with her own family. Maybe as the role of the protector, that's clearly what, you know, she does, but some of them seem very resentful.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's due to the parents too, though.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But that they are kind of disdainful of her position and absolutely don't consider her at their level, which is so astounding given she is physically larger than the rest of them and certainly mm-hmm. can kick everybody's butt.
Mm-hmm. Well, or it's almost like if, like, an adopted kid, like a family, they thought they did, you know, I could liken it to, you know, the first kid was adopted because the parents didn't think they could have kids. And then suddenly, you know, oh, they get pregnant. And there's the natural born children. And there's mm-hmm. always this sort of other, you know,
mm-hmm.
outsider mentality or something.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that happen before too.
So do you think with the kind of family dynamic that we got a closer look at in the second issue, do you think the parents have any awareness of, like, the factions that are developing or that have already developed with the kids?
I think so, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's why she was set down, and it's, you know, it's pretty alluded to too. Like, her dad knew, like, why did you execute the scientist or whatever she did in issue one?
Right. Right.
You know, that somebody had to be a martyr. Otherwise everyone would have been executed. Like, she
seemed so disappointed. I mean, ultimately he didn't seem as disappointed in her as in Jonah, but
yeah, I think he didn't want to accept that his son was this monster that he is.
Right. Right.
And that's looking to overthrow him and take over the family. And now that was sort of, that's that's been confirmed, she sent down to take care of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe enlist the help of the other faction instead of going to war with them.
It is sort of intriguing to look at a entire world structure built around family. Mm-hmm. So that the blood is thicker than water, as well as keep your enemies close. Like, it's such an interesting kind of balance between those two, like, adages. There's nothing you can do, I think, maybe we'll find out, that you can actually get rid of family members. But I assume that it is harder to do away with a family member than it has been, we've seen, with those who work for the family, and certainly, like, the waste. Nobody gives a damn about them.
Right.
But it takes this notion of family and makes it much less of a, like, safe haven, and much more corporate.
Yeah.
In nature. And I think that's really interesting.
Or corporate, like modern day, or this futuristic corporate that's both like feudal and, mm-hmm. and business related.
Oh yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, in feudal days, like that, you know, it's a Game of Thrones kind of thing where everyone's getting killed.
Right.
You know, left and right, and the power plays are all internal, and it's the struggle of the elite, you know, that it's almost better to be the waste in that way, because at least you're off the radar.
Sure. Now, did you read the timeline at the end of this issue?
Mm-hmm.
About sort of gives us a little insight into the development of how the families themselves came into power and what else was going on globally.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting world building in that way.
It is.
And the whole science of the protector, like Eve being the protector and everything. You know,
right.
That's really cool, but it's more like, I think what will really kind of be the meat of this is she, when she finds, like, she doesn't know she's not really part of the family, that she was created to protect them.
But, I mean, she knows that something's off. Right?
Yeah. But she's also being kept kind of sedated in a way and drugged and reset.
Yeah. It's kind of a bummer. I have a lot of sympathy for her. I assume that is how we're supposed to react to the way that her siblings are talking about her, and certainly what she went through in the first issue and then kind of dealing with the aftermath in this issue. But she is externally the strongest character and the one who the other families would fear, right? She is their Lazarus. She is essentially indestructible, obviously not exactly, but yet she seems so vulnerable. It's really interesting, obviously, because that's why we care about her. That balance again with the strong and the weak, but she just seems so clueless in comparison and so easily manipulated by her siblings.
Yeah. And I think that's due to the drugs though. But even though they think they're resetting her, I think maybe what we saw revealed like in issue one and bit in issue two is that she's learned to hide that stuff.
Yeah, I think so too.
You know, but there's a lot going on in terms of like her mentality and her inner monologue. We don't get mm-hmm. a lot of that yet.
We don't. Shakespearean. I hadn't thought about it until you said that. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Like in terms of the epic scale, but yet we're seeing it through, one protagonist's eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so and it's unfolding for her as it's unfolding for us.
Yeah, hopefully we get a little more of her inner monologue once we get that first kind of twist in this arc. Mm-hmm. I think we'll get to know her more than we do in these first two issues.
Do you think she's allied now with her parents against her siblings, or against some of her siblings, the twins, more specifically?
I think the twins pose the biggest threat to her right now.
Yeah.
So she, if I don't know if she, how tied she is to her father, or if that's just the smart play.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, she'll need to go against all of them and make her own way.
But, aw, go Eve.
We'll see, yeah. But that's a weird position to be in, too, because she's like this. She's not a person, essentially. You know?
Huh. Because she was created?
Yeah, she's an artificial entity. At what point do you lose your humanity?
I don't know. I hadn't thought about it as kind of drastic in that way. Because she's not artificial in that she was built, but she was...
Well, we don't know, do we? Like, where does she come from? Is she an orphan from the waste that they decided to turn into this, or...
I mean, doesn't her brother, when he's being, like, a giant jerk to her, doesn't he talk about how she was grown?
Well, that's what I mean. Like, she was probably grown in a laboratory.
Okay, but that's not too far off from some of the science that is readily available now and has been available for several decades.
Yeah.
But you know, test tube baby, et cetera.
Yeah, this is taking it to a different level, though, because the test tube babies aren't immortal. They don't, you know, self-repair.
Right.
So, you know, I think that's a bigger kind of debate and discussion. Like, where and when do we lose who we are?
Well, she's never had a chance to figure out who she is. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to be, like you said, the place where this book is going to hopefully find its rhythm is when we follow her on that journey as she discovers the truth of her background and sees her place in the larger world and not just within her family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a lot of the fact that she was questioning what happened in the first issue and
I think was
disappointed in what happened. That's a huge indicator.
Sure. But I think that what I'm trying to kind of parse out is this a book about, like, you know, there's the kind of the stories of the robot learning to be a person.
Mm-hmm.
Is this sort of that, or is this the person learning to be an individual? Like,
right.
That's what I'm trying to figure out is what's the angle here? Because
we don't know which kind she is yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, absolutely.
And even to go to like superhero books, I mean, that's sort of a thing, an ongoing thing with superhero books is like superhumans are not really human.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And they deal with human issues, but they deal with it in a very different way.
Right.
So it's interesting that people relate to these superhero stories, like there are relatable tropes, but in reality, quote unquote, like, how can you possibly relate to Superman? Because we don't have the ability to fly around the world and, you know, the speed of light and, you know, crush, you know, whatever.
Evil.
Into diamonds. Yeah. So they are common human experiences, problems blown up to super proportions. But also when you do that, the responses and how you think about them becomes totally different too.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, anybody can have family drama. Anybody can have a fight with their sibling, but it's probably not going to be quite on a scale.
Right.
The response in the subsequent issues is, I'm guessing, going to be harder for us to relate, hopefully.
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah, maybe not. It's almost like her powers and abilities might be ancillary to how she has to deal with the emotional stuff mm-hmm. with it.
Yeah, especially because we really haven't had... any opportunity, or she hasn't been given an opportunity to demonstrate much emotion at all.
But it's early on.
It is. It's a good one. I think I'm intrigued enough to keep reading. It's just issue two, and I'm excited to see where it's going to go. I don't remember. Is this a ongoing, or is this a miniseries?
No, I believe it's ongoing.
Okay.
So it doesn't need to do a whole lot, you know, in a short amount of time. I'm fine with a kind of a slow unfolding of what this world's going on. It's okay to be kind of left in the dark for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned world building. I absolutely give props to the creative team because it is certainly the concept is like immediately kind of grabs you and mm-hmm. looks at like not too distant future in a way that is pretty unique. Good stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay, so speaking of miniseries, shall we chat about Dream Merchant a bit?
Yeah, sounds good.
So the third of six issues of Dream Merchant came out this week, also from Image. And I have said a bunch of times, I can't stop thinking about this book. It scared the hell out of me the first time I read it. I don't know if you remember that I sent probably a dozen text messages as I was reading it because I had to keep stopping. And I was like a little angry that you made me read it.
Well, why don't you tell me about this Fear of the Dark?
Oh, well, so yeah, here's why. I don't read scary books. I have learned that I can't handle scary things. And yet I'm absolutely intrigued by them when I'm exposed to them. And so it's a difficult thing for me to deal with. Right. This is one of two exceptions that I can think of. The other one being Lock and Key, where I was able to overcome my legitimate fear of the dark, because the story was so compelling. When I was about four, my older cousins showed me Poltergeist on VHS, like we did in the 80s. That's how we rolled. That's a really inappropriate film to show anybody under the age of 40. And yet, I have such a clear, like, visceral memory of sitting there and watching it and then wandering away for a little bit and then coming back. And so I saw bits and pieces, but plenty of bits and pieces to stick in my brain for years to come. And I've learned that things that, like, my brain will betray me. Things that will not bother me in any other circumstance, as soon as the lights go off, I have to turn them back on. Like, if I'm home alone, which is what was happening with reading this the first time, and I am awake, then all the lights need to be on and the windows need to be covered and, like, reflective surfaces are not my friend. So this story, which is literally nightmares coming to life and deals with this kind of alternative world where our nightmares reside and the connection between our world and that world, should be everything that I stand against. Mm-hmm. And yet I think it's handled very delicately, and it's handled in a way that is almost like unraveling a mystery, and so slightly less kind of horror based, although some of the imagery is pretty freaky. But I think it's because of my like fear that I am so into this story, because mm-hmm. I'm rooting for Winslow. I want him to beat the nightmares because then I can beat mine in that very sort of base way.
Yeah. I mean, it's a visceral thing. Like, dream, you know, the way our dreams manifest, especially bad dreams, having that kind of played out in a, well, our bad dreams are real. Mm-hmm. It's very core to a human, you know, human psyche. Like, when, like, from, especially as a kid, for me, like, I would have my imagination was so overactive that, like, it would play out between being awake to going to sleep, you know, especially mm-hmm. as a young kid. It's like that kind of that separation between reality and what's a dream and what's real mm-hmm. is not black and white, you know, as a child.
No, not at all. Not at all. And I distinctly remember my mom telling me to not be so upset about my dreams, because I could have control over them, that I could dictate the action and I could prevent the bad things from happening. Mm-hmm. And I've only ever lucidly been able to do that once. And it was right around the time that my mom said, no, it's okay. Here's how to do it. And I had a dream about falling into a deep sea with all of these kind of prehistoric, like sharks and plesiosaurs and things with big gnashing of teeth. And I woke up and I was very upset, and I went back to sleep and redreamed it. And when I fell into the sea, they were all fossils. So they were not going to actually eat me with their terrible teeth, right? That's it. That's the only time in my life that I can remember not completely losing control of my dreams and waking up like in a cold sweat. Clearly, I don't have like a somewhat scary dream merchant guy to pal around with to teach me how to manipulate my dreams. Nor am I the gateway between this dream, this world, and the dream world. So I think that's good.
Well, I would, as a young teenager, I found like a box of, you know, my hippie books from my parents, from like the 60s and 70s, and they were all the Carlos Castaneda books.
Oh,
you know, the Don Juan.
Yeah.
And there was a ton. I really got into those sort of. It's all about kind of the dream world and exploring, you know, the subconscious, manifesting that into reality. And there's a lot of that reminiscent in the story too.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's because our dreams are manifestations of our fears and anxieties. You know, that's what the nightmares are.
Right.
And when we're engaged in them and we're in the dream world, we don't have that much control of them. Like, most people don't have the ability to kind of be aware and make themselves out of it. That's the whole point of the dream is getting your brain relaxing and kind of letting all the stuff that you keep locked up when you're awake to flood out. So there's, you know, that's why it's kind of uncomfortable to deal with this sort of thing.
It is. It's tremendously uncomfortable. It's also sort of a bummer to me as an adult that this is something that I'm still dealing with.
Yeah.
I was very much told at a young age that like I would grow out of it. You're not going to be afraid of the dark when you're an adult. I'm extra conscious of not demonstrating that fear in front of Avi because he just turned 8, which is probably around the same age that I was maybe re-exposed to like haunted houses and things like that. And so I feel like my fear of the dark was reinforced. And I don't want to perpetuate that in my own kid. I don't want him seeing me hurrying up and turning on the light because, it's dark in here. Kind of like a crazy person. Because it is very irrational.
And it's very easy to place your phobias onto your children, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, the fear of the dark is so visceral and primal, too. You know,
that's like, making me feel a little bit better. Thanks, Aaron.
Well, it is. I mean, it stems back from, like, you know, our days out in the caves. Like, the dark, you can't see. You don't know what predators are out there that are going to get
you. Exactly. And they could be ghosts, and they could just be terrible. And it would be the claws and the thing and
the unseen horrors waiting to drag us off into the night and never be seen
right
again. The other, you know, recently we were kind of reminded in our family too, like, sleep is a very, it's a very complicated thing. Like my wife has this seizure disorder that she hadn't had a seizure for 9 years, and she had a seizure 2 weeks ago, and it always comes right after waking up within the half an hour. And it's after she had it, like for the last couple of weeks, it's like that kind of waking up in the morning after sleeping is just very kind of nerve wracking when it should be, you're starting your day.
Absolutely. You've lost that, like the connection to something that should be like this safe restart for your day,
right?
And the thing that you do to like recharge your life is now not your friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't know if the nightmare is going to follow you out of your dream, basically,
yeah,
for her, and like come into reality. So it's hard to have that those safe kind of moments taken away.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of that going on. You know, it's like it's such a base thing that's being explored in this.
Yeah, and really sort of beautifully too. I think the art is so expressionistic. Mm-hmm. And the color, man, the color, especially in the dream world, is just so, so rich.
Yeah. Vivid, I would say.
Vivid. That's a good word too. Pink, lots of pink and lots of red. I guess the only other thing I wanted to mention specifically with the comic is something new happened with Winslow when he was asleep. He like moves in his mm-hmm. sleep. Which is cool. Different, developing abilities, maybe something more for him to hone as his connection between the two worlds. And so I'm pretty excited to see him come into his own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he hasn't had a lot of opportunity for success
right.
in both his like backstory and, you know, since he was discovered. And
well, it's kind of cool too, like the ability that manifests is sort of, it's sort of a, I don't know, what do you want to call it, like an analog or taking like these sleep disorders too, like mm-hmm. you know how people will sleepwalk
right
and right. oh wake up, you know, miles away, or they walk down, you know, down the road, or they got on a train or something like that. You know, sort of like right, but his sleep disorders are manifesting as powers,
right?
But it's sort of taking these ideas that, you know, problems people have in their sleep
mm-hmm.
that are real things, and then kind of turning them into a superhero kind of thing.
I hope it doesn't go too far in that direction. I hope that he stays pretty like rooted in human ability, yet maybe like his senses are slightly heightened, or like he is that connection between the two worlds. And so he is special in that regard. But, mm-hmm. I don't want him to go like all Matrix on us.
Right.
So hopefully it stays a little bit more, I don't know, messy. I think visceral is a good word for this book.
Yeah, I don't need the superhero battle at the end where he's blowing apart the nightmares, you know, with his hand powers that he's discovering
right.
or something like that.
But I
don't know. I don't think we're quite heading there. I think it's more of this journey of discovery.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just flipping through it right now, and the cover for this third issue is creepy. It's definitely... it has some of the scariest imagery,
but in a way,
the kind of bad guys that aren't really guys from the other world look like.
It's good, and it's good to face those fears.
Yes,
as an adult, I mean, you know, we can rationalize when we're children, we can't. But as an adult, we can learn to rationalize and take control of those fears. It's easy to let our lives get ruled by them, though.
True, but it's also something that I guess in this particular instance, it's a phobia that, and I'm throwing that word around very much incorrectly. It's not a truly debilitating phobia.
Yeah.
But it is a fear of mine specifically that I wouldn't say has prevented me from doing, you know, much. I don't go to haunted houses at Halloween time, but like lots of people don't.
Mm-hmm.
So facing this particular fear, I don't know, maybe the way that we're seeing Winslow face this fear will be a little bit more eye-opening for me to see kind of like what he ends up with at the very end, mm-hmm. like how much he's been able to overcome. And maybe I can say like, yeah, I can watch a scary movie and not be freaked out. Not that I get all of my life lessons from comic books, mind you, but I guess my point is that it's not the same kind of fear of that is really preventing me from like living life to its fullest. Mm-hmm. Whereas he clearly needs to deal with this or he's not going to have a life to live very shortly. They're coming to kill you, Winslow.
Right.
Sorry, dude.
Yeah, the stakes aren't as high for us, but that's why it's an
goodness.
That's why it's an interesting story.
Thank goodness. Awesome.
Well, I think we've beaten that one to death.
Yeah. What's next?
Well, we can talk. I think there's a lot to talk about in Hawkeye. The annual.
I will always talk about Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is girl Hawkeye.
Well, you know, a little bit of Clint at the beginning.
Sure.
In fact, I would say his like "woe is me" presence is totally the catalyst for Kate mm-hmm. storming off to the West Coast, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the Hawkeye annual, good. Good response to what's been happening in Bed-Stuy, right?
Sure. no, but you know, it's funny. Like I don't personally relate to Kate in this way, but it having a 19-year-old daughter who is learning to get out of the house and the lessons of the world, you know, what it actually takes to be out on your own.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot that's kind of going on right now in my life that kind of parallels that. I mean, it's not the same. I don't have a 21-year-old, you know, trophy wife or anything, but, but you know, there's a rude reality out there for her that she does not understand yet.
Sure.
And I think that was a little bit for Kate too. It's like, fine, you know, she's going to storm off and go to the West Coast. Daddy's not going to pay for everything anymore.
She does sort of storm off. And I think that was one of the things that I was concerned about that ended up being okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because the storming off and the complete loss of control is something that I don't necessarily equate with Kate Bishop. She is the epitome of control and always kind of has been, because she is, this is going to sound so silly, but she's self-made. Not from a money perspective,
mm-hmm.
but she kind of decided what she wanted and she went out and got it. And that has been a pretty consistent thing for her since the first Young Avengers run. So I was very concerned that this was going to throw a little bit of that away and she was going to be Daddy's little princess, kind of pouting and abandoning her problems by driving off into the sunset.
Yeah, but you know, it's funny too.
It wasn't quite like that.
But isn't family like the biggest emotional trigger for so many people? So it's like,
sure.
No matter how put together or confident or whatever it is, a person might show to the people in their lives, their family shows up and all that gets stripped away.
Right.
So I think that's true with Kate too. It's like she might be the most confident, you know, put together young Avenger there is, but her dad shows up with his new wife and that she becomes a spoiled rich kid who's throwing a tantrum.
Right.
Because all that goes out the door when it's, you know, when it's family, because that is the most, that's the inner kind of circle that cuts through all your defenses.
It does. It does. I think I was most concerned about what the interplay would be with her and Clint. Because I think that the camaraderie and loyalty there has been building in a really lovely way.
Mm-hmm.
And the...
Well, isn't there tension there too, though?
Yes.
All that kind of weird sexual tension that shouldn't really be there.
I don't see that at all. I see parent-child tension. I see mm-hmm. father-figure tension. I don't see the sexual tension from his side. I see her trying to get approval from an older male. Absolutely.
Maybe, but there's a lot of that even in her with her family too. Like she her dad, whoever her mom is, who we don't know. Her dad married a trophy wife.
Right.
She.
Her mom's dead.
Is that what it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, mom's dead. Trophy wife. Dad. She's looking for a dad figure, but a lot of women end up looking for dad figures and sexualizing them.
Right. And that's like the only thing she knows how to do without even knowing that she's doing it. Right. Like,
right. Cause she's
aware of the fact that she's attractive. She's aware of the fact that she's had those kinds of relationships with older men. We've seen it in this book and we're seeing it in Young Avengers also.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's part of a young woman's life to, you know, like early life. Like your sexuality is so available to you and men,
sure.
And then men, you know, are available to you at her age. Clint has not been available to her.
Right.
But they skirt this line often that maybe he doesn't want to, but, you know, doesn't want to because she's not appropriate for him. But
it doesn't mean that he's not like a every other man.
Yeah. every man can have the thought, but you don't act on the thought.
Oh.
Every thought goes across every man's brain. It doesn't necessarily mean that goes any further. And I think that's what they're even talking about. Like he's like saying, you know, isn't Clint saying like my friend, like, you know, like he's stumbling over that. There's that stumble over spot.
Right.
After she leaves, like, you know, my not girlfriend friend, you know, she just went off and took my dog and this sort of thing. It's like, you know, there is that because it's not a friendship and it's not a mentor mentee relationship. It's this girlfriend who isn't a girlfriend who saves him and he saves her and they fight, you know, battles and she walks.
So why is that not mentor mentee?
Because
I mean, like, what's the extra layer there that's pushing inappropriate?
It's just the tension. If there's an attraction there that they both won't either acknowledge for whatever reason or don't want to acknowledge for whatever reason, that will just it burst in this issue. Everything in their life bursts. Like, I got to get out of here. You know, something has to happen. I need to leave this situation. And he was pushing her away too. He's isolating himself.
Oh, totally. It's sort of adorable in a sad puppy kind of way. That, like, he's completely non-functional at the beginning of this issue as a result of what's happened in the previous ones. But I don't know. I still don't see the sexual tension from his side. I think that she is like idolizing their relationship and like we talked about in terms of her track record with like older men and what she sees in her life with her father and like his new wife who happens to be a friend of hers from school. That's totally a mess.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that she has necessarily great ideas about the basis for these kinds of relationships, but I don't know. I think his point when he yells at her, like, you're not my girlfriend. You can't act like this,
mm-hmm.
is actually taking a stand and very loudly proclaiming that our relationship is not based on this and you're making it be like this. And that's one-sided.
Yeah. Yeah. You might be right. I mean, if anything, fine. Then the tension is coming from her, but I think that was a good move to leave.
Yeah.
And get separation.
Sure. Agreed. Cause he was totally being a dick. Agreed.
Yeah, but for a lot of guys, guys in general don't know how to deal with those kind of advances from a woman too, because we're raised. I mean, you know, it's societal that we are the pursuers, and when we're pursued and we can't act on it or we don't want to act on it, I don't think a lot of guys have the capacity to deal with that properly. Like, women understand how to. I think. This is generalization, obviously, but mm-hmm. I think women are taught societally to be able to rebuff advances from men, but men are not taught the same thing because it just doesn't come up that often.
I don't know that I agree, but I'm not surprised that I don't agree because, you know,
look,
I'm a woman.
I haven't had the opportunity to turn down many women. You know, that's not something that comes up often in my life, but I also wouldn't really know how to if it did.
Well, in this particular case, like we've both been in relationships for years and years and years, so presumably the opportunity diminishes in that state, right? But yeah. I just think I think that they are in a very unhealthy place, and I think that, not that I condone running away from problems, but I think that Kate's decision to get out of there is the right one.
Yeah.
But
she doesn't burn the bridge. It's not like she can't go back. It's getting space.
I'm not sure that he would be necessarily aware of or be able to process the burning of the bridge, even if that's what was happening. Yeah. I mean, she takes the dog. That's kind of a little bit of a dick move also on her part. Kind of,
but you know, it's funny too, because they've established Lucky as sort of pretty autonomous too. Like, he makes the decision to leave.
Right. Right.
You know, he chooses between the two of them.
Yeah.
So he'd go in on the adventure with her.
Yeah.
And he always seems to decide who needs his help.
He is kind of magical like that.
Right. So she's leaving. She's going to the West Coast. He's going with her because she's going to get into some trouble.
Where? I'm just flipping through it right now because he helps her out at the very beginning. But then, like, where does he end up?
He helps her escape from MetaMask, too.
Oh, there he is. Yeah. Okay. I was just making sure that he's still in the car.
And that's such a funny kind of, like, how, whatever you thought of that kind of plot thread, too. It's such, like, the girl shows up in California, fresh out, you know, fresh off the bus.
Yeah.
Dreaming her eye, and, oh, here's a helping stranger who's going to help me out, and, oh, what a beautiful house, and, you know, it's like the California nightmare story.
It was pretty excellent. It was a nice throwback to kind of dealing with that. It wasn't quite a loose end, but it was a, like, an opportunity that had been, like, written earlier with their interaction. But yeah, it was, there were a lot of side gags in this annual, which the fact that it's called West Coast Avenger made me giggle, of course. So here's a truly hypothetical question, right? Like, she's out on the West Coast, and, like, when is this? And how does this...
I think this is current... Well, you know how Marvel continuity is. It's like...
I know, but just humor me for a little bit.
I think how it's current continuity.
Okay. Are you reading Young Avengers?
Yeah, I don't know how that fits into that timeline either.
Okay.
They seem to come back to this timeline too, so who knows? And it doesn't... But you can't really... I know. Your brain will explode if you try to figure out the timing.
Throwing it out there.
I mean, I think Young Avengers could probably be happening kind of any time.
Sure.
Any time, like, kind of currently, but it doesn't have to, you know, be happening simultaneously with this.
Right.
And Hawkeye, anyway, is sort of outside of...
It is. Whatever. And so much more forgiving with that. I don't like my head to explode, so I try to avoid it as much as possible. But I do think it's an interesting shift in this book to split them up. I mean, she's been around since the second issue, and
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go from this. Is it going to be two parallel storylines going on at the same time? Is it going to trade off, or is she just kind of out of the picture for a little bit?
Yeah. Very interesting.
So, there's a lot to think about there. I just definitely think of that same sort of thing with my own family of learning to be out on your own and kind of being okay with not having much. Like, that's the hardest thing as a parent for me. It's like looking back to, like, you know, we were looking at apartments for her, and she and her friend are going to move out. you know, September.
Nice.
We went to look at the apartments, and they're okay, but I just forgot what it's like to be a college student and go into an apartment that is just kind of gross. It doesn't matter when you're 19, you know? And you don't need to have every kind of trapping of, you know, comfort and living. It doesn't, you know, like I see how she lives. Her room's not going to be clean. She'll never wash her clothes, you know. It'll be everywhere. And that's fine for her. It drives me crazy. But it's hard not to expect the same things. And that's, you know, when I think back on my time in college, that was the most fun in my life, too. And I didn't really care about any of that stuff either. You just don't, it doesn't matter because you're so wrapped up with your social world.
I guess. You know, I'm still looking for a new place to live myself.
Yeah.
And this is going into the third month now, and it's heart palpitations. So
it's a little easier if you didn't have a whole bunch of stuff. And
like a family.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Then it's a pain to move. When you've got a couple of, you know, boxes full of things, some clothes, and like a bed you flop on, you know, once a week when you crash
back to your
house.
So this is her first apartment outside of home?
Yep.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah. And
wow.
Have to buy food and
pay
your bills. And, yeah.
She should try Kate's technique of bartering for supplies. I'm not entirely sure how successful that is.
Yeah. It was a, you gotta be careful, I think, as a woman too, with what words you use.
Yes.
That goes back to when she was 15 and we were telling her to get maybe a summer job, and her solution was she was just going to go door to door in the neighborhood and offer her services. And I said, you can't say that to
No, you cannot.
Right. So.
Jack of all trades,
funny thing from the past.
Odd jobs, but not services.
Yeah. Yep. Words have meaning.
They do.
Well, speaking of which, do we have anything else we want to talk about, or is this session therapy session closed for the time?
I think we're coming up on time now. anything catch your eye for next week?
We've got a bunch of stuff next week. I don't know what we're gonna end up talking about, but I think there's gonna be some nuggets. Looking here. I mean, we've got sex. Sex is always good to talk about.
Absolutely. Addiction and, you know, coming off of past relationships and those exes back in your life. Mm-hmm. Good stuff there.
Captain Marvel always has some stuff going on too.
Absolutely. She's full of issues.
That's true.
In a delightful way.
And actually, Batman Inc. 13 is coming out, and Batman Inc. deals with a lot of family problems.
Ah, that's a good one. So perhaps I'll add it to my list. Yeah. You'll inspire me to.
There's a lot going on there. So I think we'll be able to find some stuff to talk about next week.
Good stuff. Well played.
As a conclusion, I'll say this is our first episode, and thanks for giving it a try. And it was definitely a lot rougher than I think it's going to be going in the future. So stick with us, and we're going to try to do this every week and talk about things that are going on in our lives and going on in comics and going on in the world.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everyone.
Tonight there's gonna be a jailbreak somewhere in this town.